Miami Ghost Chronicles Stories of the Supernatural. And I'm out here on Key Biscayne, okay, which is a small island right next to Miami. It's got a causeway. And what I'm out here for is I've gotten a lot of people commenting on my website about strange occurrences that they've experienced here. Because what happens is, yes, this is a very nice beach. As a matter of fact, this is a very nice island. But in this area especially, and I don't know, if across the street where there's some pines, a lot of people, okay, historically have used this like as a lover's lane. Down there, there's a fishing pier, or just to hang out with friends. But, I mean, let me give you a for instance of some of the disturbing things that have happened here. Back in 1984, okay, three friends, young friends, they come out here and hang out, have something to drink, maybe drugs, I'm not sure. Bottom line is they all pass out in the car. What happens is here, like right now there's still some cars out there, but as the night goes on, everybody leaves. I guess they were passed out, they didn't realize. The next thing you know is they've got a man approaching the car, talking or acting like he's a police officer, and this is what they think. One of them, it's two guys and a girl. One of the guys, he's so passed out, he doesn't know what's going on. The girl and the guy, they're thinking this is a police officer. He starts to frisk them, but when he gets to the girl, he starts to fondle her breast and feel her out. This is when they start realizing this guy is not a cop. Or if he's a cop, something's wrong. And sure enough, he was not a police officer. And what ended up happening is when, this is the fast version, when the young man who was 20 years old tried to resist, he took a bat, whacked him a few times over the head, takes the girl, tells her, hey, you know what, if you don't do what I'm telling you to do, you're going to end up just like him. So he disrobed her, rapes her, but then he takes her with him, okay, drives around Miami, and in the interim, this girl, I think, you know, she put her thinking cap on. You know, she's thinking, this guy's going to kill me. And she starts talking to him, humanizes herself, blah, 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 blah. But guess what happens? This guy, who by the name, his name is Ricky Roberts, he's realized that he's left his wallet back at the scene. So he comes back with his girl back to the scene to retrieve his wallet. Finds that the guy he hit over the head is still alive. The guy in the back passed out. He's still out of it. Okay. And he rapes this girl a second time, but fortunately for her, he drops her off at home or close by. And of course, later on, she tells the police, identifies him, and he's convicted eventually of the murder, because that 20-year-old that he hit with a bat did die. And the rape, and first he received a death penalty, but then it was commuted, and presently he's still serving time for it. His name is Ricky Roberts. But anyway, here we go. Sorry, guys. What happens is that I get a lot of people. I mean, besides that, there's a lot of other stuff that's gone on here that's kind of dark. Not kind of, very dark. Like, as there's water here, there's Biscayne Bay. There's water over there, which a lot of people understand that work in the paranormal field, that this is very conducive to paranormal events. And like I said, a lot of the times the people that tell me about this is like after everything quiets down. Usually when it's later. Right now it's about a little bit over one, it's about one in the morning, a little bit after one in the morning, and it's still Saturday night. A lot of people that tell me that they park out here and all of a sudden when everything quiets down, very little people left, they see a lot of shadows, especially in that area with the pine trees. They see shadows, they've heard screamings, whisperings. Somebody even documented what they call shadow people, not just shadows, shadow people. And what did they say? Scary. You know, this is the I'm telling you, this is like an ovulus, okay? And I haven't really even started trying to get elicit any direct response from it, and I'm describing shadow people and it's saying the word scary, okay? Which for most people who understand what shadow people are, that's exactly how they feel about it. But anyway, they describe how some of them have gone from having a great time to all of a sudden like you could tell there's noise here, there's the water, there's all of a sudden it's real quiet, and then they have this really unusual feeling come over them of dread, and it's Matter of fact, they leave. And it's happened on more than one occasion. It's incredible how different people who don't know each other are telling me the exact, almost to the T, the exact same description. Now, let me give you, I mean, I'm going to have a full show on this, okay, where I'm going to give you a little bit of more history of this land. And the reason why I do that is the land absolutely has a lot to do with things that happen later on. It's like a layer on top of a layer, okay?
Brother.
Okay, see, right now I'm that one south left field.
Yeah.
Again, we have out here in Biscayne Bay, we've had a lot of body parts that have been dumped in there in bags, okay?
You know what? It could have been that guy that got dismembered saying about his brother.
Could have been. And as a matter of fact, let me get to that story. Because you beat me to it. What happens is, a lot of these body parts, sometimes they immediately know who it is. And sometimes they've even had the perpetrator. Other times it's taken years, believe it or not, to identify who the body parts belong to. Others, they've identified them, they don't have the perpetrator. One of the ladies here, it took years for them to identify who the body parts are, because of course, besides being dismembered, the salt water does away with a lot of the DNA evidence that usually law enforcement uses to identify the victims or identify the scene. Okay, terrific. You'd be surprised. Out here, there's also a lot of sacrificial offerings dumped by in Santeria ceremonies. Also, you get a lot of, they've even found the cow. Okay, a carcass of a cow.
Wow.
Let me tell you something. That's a sacrifice. This is not, there's no pasture land. There's no pastures close by.
No farms, okay. No nothing.
Nothing. So, perform. Okay. All right. Somebody's trying to put their 2 cents worth in. And guess what? That was a sacrifice, you know. But anyway, and what Henry was talking about when he said brother is that I am going to have a full show. In 2009, there was a young man, 21 years old, who ended up being dismembered, and his body parts were discovered within days, just within days of him disappearing after he left a bar. Okay, and that crime has never been solved. And the one that identified him is because they recovered the body parts was his brother. As a matter of fact, his brother had been out with him that night and left early, and then when he left later that night, that was the last time he was seen. And the next thing you know is when these body parts started washing up and being found, you know, in bags within less than a week. I mean, apparently whoever, you know, it was two men were the ones that took them, but again, no identification was ever made, and to this date, it remains a cold case in Miami, which one of my, I even wonder, was he part of a ritual sacrifice? Okay, because within less than a week, he was all passed out, this poor guy, you know, he was a day laborer. It wasn't like he was a rich guy, you know. I don't think it was a robbery. He was passed out apparently when he left the bar he was at. So if the motive was robbery, all I had to do was go through his pockets. I mean, he was so passed out, and they know they took him. Two men took him in a car, and unfortunately they couldn't get enough information to make an identify the plate. And within a week, or less than a week, within days, his body parts started washing up. So again, there's a lot of dark, turbulent stuff that's happened here. This island, per se, was occupied by the Tecuesta Indians, okay? And this was even verified that they lived here, because after the Hurricane Andrew in 92, which caused a lot of erosion, archaeologists were able to confirm that the Tecuesta Indians actually lived on this island, okay? And later on, it was discovered by Ponce de Leon, and then, you know, fast forward, turn of the century, it's a coconut plantation. This was a coconut plantation. And then in the 1940s, the family that owned it gave it over to the local government, which at that time was when they built the causeway to connect it between Miami. And it's this island sits very close, as you can see, here to the coast right there, you know. So it was but at that time, you know, it's always had a lot of beaches and parks, and a lot of tennis events are held out here. But like all things, there's a dark underbelly. And as a matter of fact, we've had very famous murder happened out in the 1960s, which is very scandalous. It was the Moslem murder, and I'm going to have more information You know, we've had drownings, unfortunately. We've had a lot of bicyclists. A lot of people come out here and bicycle. We've had a lot of bicyclist deaths, a lot, at least four in the last few years. Okay. We have these deeds, you know, people, body parts, sacrifices. There's a lot of spiritual turbulence, which is the perfect setting for paranormal events. And now I'm not talking residual stuff. I'm talking about intelligent hauntings. Okay? It's almost a perfect storm. It's water on both sides, and, you know, strange. I'm telling you. It's exactly what I'm talking about. Strange. Strange.
Okay, wow, so, look at that.
That's very unusual. So
they're contributing.
Yeah, they're contributing, and I haven't really addressed anything. So let's see. Let's see what happens. Okay, I'm going to start asking, see, some direct questions, because I was just holding it, doing my thing, and it still contributes. So somebody here, maybe more than one, really wants to come through with a message. Let's see what comes through.
When you were standing there, I saw something like near you.
Really?
Yeah.
Where? Back here? Or where?
Like around you. Like around you.
Okay. Here we go, folks. Anyway, you know, I'm going to be doing a complete show on this, so you'll be seeing this. This right here is a part of it. Amber.
That could have been a girl, Amber.
Exactly. No, it's coming in like with a capital A as Amber. Okay, so again, I'm going to keep a record of all these words that are coming through, just to see if they tie in, excuse me, with anything linked. You know, maybe there's been other incidents out here with somebody by the name of Amber. Okay.
That is the name of a girl.
Yeah. No, it came in. It came in as a capital A, which is a name.
Yeah.
So let's say, okay, is this Amber that's here now? Okay, this is about Amber, I need you to give me some type of positive confirmation about this person. Let's see what happens. You know, like all things, the ovulus, if it truly works the way it should, okay, it's not a kind of an on-demand thing. Okay, most people understand if you have a paranormal event, if you have a discarnate entity that is trying to communicate, it's very difficult for them many times to do so. Okay, that's why, you know, sometimes getting a coherent, understandable message, especially through an ovulus, through anything, even through EVPs, is difficult. It's just not like talking, you know, the way people do. And that's why the messages sometimes are disjointed, where you get one or two words and you're left to like fill in the blanks like it is now. But anyway, this out here is an area, like I said, that the land has history. It does have turbulent history. Okay, there's a lot of things that have happened out here, like all places, but there's a lot of dark stuff. Bank, you can look that up and see what happens with that. Again, you know, that's another thing about, you know, whether it's an ovulus session or whether it's an EVP session, you know, there's always going to be words that are thrown at you that at that moment you're thinking, this has nothing to do with anything, until you go ahead and you investigate and then you piece together, and yes, it does have some significance. Okay, so I don't validate and I don't discount until I do a little bit more investigation, and some right off the bat you can tell there's absolutely does have something to do with what I know about. So far, nothing has come through right now, but let's see. Okay, again, you're going to have to give me a little bit more information than that, you know, and maybe this, like I said, this is not them, it's me, my lack of information, you know, like I said, and by the time I produce this show, I will go back on this and find out if any of these words do have any type of significance, or if not, you know.
They're not always cooperative.
Well, no, it's not that also. It's just that this is something that I want people to understand, and I've said it before. When you have something like this, like what I'm doing right now, you have discarnates come in that sometimes aren't even tied to the land. And everybody wants to try to get a message through, okay? And I don't know, I'm sure a lot of you have seen that movie Ghost, okay? And you see that part where Whoopi Goldberg is sitting there, and she can see all the spirits, nobody else can. And they're kind of elbowing each other out of the way to try to communicate, because everybody wants to get their message through. Okay, well, that's exactly the way it works. Okay, you will have discarnates. By the way, these are not people that have been enlightened. I'm talking about discarnates, which have never gotten through, who are kind of trying to elbow each other out of the way sometimes. Sofa. Now, okay, again, you know, that I'm on left field on that one. That could be anything. Sofa. Let's see. Who are trying to jostle each other out of the way to get, communicate, and say something.
Sofa could be home. Like, they want to go to their home.
It could be anything. Like I said, I'm not going to validate something without really having a clear knowledge that this is, that there's something that is significant. You know, again, discarnates, like, they are not, there's a lot of discarnates that are not tied to a place besides what's here. And like I said, what I'm going on is based on what I'm being told by people that come to my website, is that I also understand that you're going to have discarnates who are not, are thirsting to be acknowledged, to let somebody know, hey, this is what happened, I'm lost, whatever. And even something as simple as an ovulous attempt, okay, is going to bring them in. So that's why I'm saying, they might not have no significance. They might have significance, but I'll never know, because there's really nothing here that I could ever trace back. Or I'm going to do a little bit of research, and I'm going to say, you know what, this absolutely has to do with what happened. You know, whatever. Like I said, sometimes there's a lot of stories that don't make the papers, or, you know, it happened way back when, and it didn't make the front page. Sometimes it just makes like a small little, you know, story, you know, that's overlooked, and you only find it after you do some cord. It can mean anything. I mean,
maybe they used the cord to tie somebody up.
Well, you know, some of these body parts, you know, they found that they did have ligature marks. Okay, again, that's such a broad term. Again, I'm not, you know, if there's something to it, I'll find out between now and the time that the show is produced. So, as a matter of fact, guys, I did similar, if you go to, I did earlier some other EVP sessions that I posted live stream on Facebook and on Twitter. Okay, and I got some interesting feedback on those. Okay, and believe me, as much as I would love to say absolutely yes, I'm not going to do that, because I think that defeats the purpose. Lock. See, that's interesting. Cord and lock. See, that now we're going in the direction of something which is, you know, here we're talking about people that were probably held at some point before they were killed and dismembered and thrown in the bay.
Maybe tied up, maybe tortured.
Locked. I mean, it could be a lot of things. You know, and that's the thing, you know, you have the theory from law enforcement a lot of times that when, you know, somebody gets dismembered, this is the killers basically attempting to get rid of the body. Like, oh my God, you know, this is the only thing they can think of to get rid of a body versus burying it or whatever. And I agree, yeah, sometimes you get people that for some reason they think, this is how I'm going to get rid of the evidence of my body, I'm going to dismember it. But there's still others, okay, that dismembering a body is part of a ritual, okay? Okay, it is part of a ritual. In other words, this is, the dismemberment is not the ends to the means of getting rid of the body. That's why I'm saying, anybody that dumps something out here in Biscayne Bay is not attempting to get rid of it, because you know it's going to show up either somebody boating on the shore against one of the things. It's like there's no attempt really to hide it, okay? So again, it's almost like it's ritualistic, and that person or persons is very, very sure that this thing is not going to get traced back to them, unfortunately, especially when it's a stranger on a stranger, which is part and parcel of anybody that's taken and basically killed as part of ritual sacrifice. And I know a lot of people don't like to think about that, because it's bad enough that somebody's getting killed, but they would hate to think that this is part of somebody want to call it black magic. I mean, there's a lot of things out there. And then I'm going to get into, when I said when I get into the show, and because the ovulus here is kind of slowed down.
Short.
See what I mean? See, that's the thing. Slowed down, and it gives me a word, shirt. Shirt, again. All these, from what I understand, when I was researching this, all these body parts were found naked, okay? In some cases, there was a couple where they found clothing in a separate bag, bloody clothing, which they weren't sure who they belonged to. But from what I understand, Lester, with an L, Lester, again, that name doesn't mean anything to me right now, but absolutely. Amber and Lester, I am going to look that up, because that very well might have a connection to, or for all I know, what if I've got, you know, an entity is telling me, this is the name of the person that killed me. It's like, you know, the unknown perpetrator. Remove. Again, I'm out there on that one. But Lester, we've got two names, Lester and Amber. Okay, Lester and Amber. And again, guys, and I said it on my live streams. If you ever see anything, hear anything, sense something. Sometimes I have people that they'll see something, and they don't see it. Like when they see the video, they don't see it with these eyes. They see it with this eye. They see it with the third eye. They see it in their mind's eye. They pick up the sense of something. So if any of those fill in the blanks, you see it, if you hear it, if you see it with this eye, let me know. You can visit website MiamiGhostChronicles.com and let me know. Comment there. Send me an email. Okay? Again, because sometimes people pick up things. I don't have eyes in the back of my head. Sometimes I wish I did. But, you know, and, you know, it's just, again, it wouldn't be the first or the last time that I get input from a third party, see something, and gives me feedback, and it's like, that's on the money. It's absolutely on the money. Okay? So let's see, one more word, and then, you know, like I said, then when I produce the show, I'm going to tell you all these tales of, you know, fan. Okay, well, the only thing I can think of is here in Miami. You know, now everybody has air conditioning. But I grew up in Miami, and once upon a time, you lived here in Miami with fans, okay? Most people, this is how they live. Yeah, and you know, maybe you turn on the air conditioning at night. But basically, you lived life with your fans on. Okay, so maybe that is something having to do with maybe some an older type of case or scenario. You know, like I said, where this was important. You know, living out here in Florida, especially in South Florida, cobweb.
It was an old house.
Cobweb again. I don't know that one. I'm like, ooh. Okay, you're gonna have to give me something. One more word. That's it. So if you're gonna tell me something important. Give me another name. Let's see. Anyway, like I was saying, if you're trying really hard to communicate and all you're getting through is one word, the one word you get out, you're desperately trying to say something, the person at the other end is like, huh? This is what I feel like, huh? Let's see. All right, guys. You know what? Time is getting late out here. It's almost 2 a.m. Okay. You can tell it's really beautiful out here. It is. Okay. I'm going to see if we can capture some of the water. I'm going to turn on the light. Let me know. Okay. How well we're doing with the lighting, okay?
You're okay.
We're okay?
Yep.
Because I know that.
The ocean, you don't see nothing.
Huh?
I don't see the, you know, the ocean. You see you, but you don't see the ocean.
Okay, let's see. Come on. Let's see. Are you picking up anything there?
No, just dark.
Just dark, okay.
Need the light. No,
okay.
It's too murky.
To murky. Okay, guys. All right. Anyway, I tried. I don't know if you can hear the water, though. All right, come on. And what's happening is, like I said, like I'm just steps away. I don't know if you can hear the waves. Okay. It is very beautiful out here. But again, and you can tell there's still a lot of traffic, which is unfortunately not the not the most conducive place or timing. But if I was going to wait for absolute silence, I'd never be out here. It would never be that time. It would never be that time. Okay? Again, also, if you have any stories, if you're Miamian and you ever have a story or you ever experienced anything out here on Crandon Park, okay, on any of the beaches, I would love to hear from you and that you tell me what your story is. And see, you'd be surprised. Maybe somebody else has had a similar experience. So, okay, guys. I'll be seeing you because it's getting close to Marlene's bedtime. I think I passed it. See you guys. Hi, everybody. Okay, you saw me going out there and doing my ovulus thing out there. And as a matter of fact, just I want to clarify, that little stretch I was on, it's called Hobie Beach. So, as I promised, as a matter of fact, I'm going to have to divide this whole presentation into two parts because there's just so much stuff that's come up as far as things that have happened out there in the Hobie Beach, Key Biscayne area. But anyway, the first thing is, as far as that description that I had of the murder rape that occurred back in 1984, you know, of course, I did some research. And the first thing, like I told you, the guy that was eventually caught and convicted, his name was Ricky Roberts. Now, I'm going to go back to the beginning. The beginning being that, believe it or not, this guy, all right, was not that old. He was only a little bit older than the people that he attacked. He was never supposed to be here, okay? When he was 16 years old, okay, he had moved to Maryland, a town called Salisbury, from where he originally was from, which is Savannah, Georgia. Okay. Now, he had been staying with some relatives out there. And back like in 1975, he was living now in Maryland. And he went, like I said, at this time, he was only 16 years old himself. He got in. And basically what the lady that got attacked, that he almost killed her, says that around 2:30 p.m. he knocks on her apartment door and forces his way in, rapes her at knife point, okay? Then he chokes her until she's like unconscious, then stabs her 5 times with a pair of scissors. And thankfully she didn't die. He was apprehended like the day next because a neighbor, I guess, saw who he looked like and volunteered the information. And of course, subsequently, you know, they convicted him of that crime. And, you know, I mean, they found a bunch of stuff, you know, blood stains, the whole nine yards. Okay. Now he goes to jail serving what they call a life imprisonment, for the attempted murder and the rape and everything. Now, somewhere along the line, because of his age or because of psychopathology they observed in him, somewhere along the line, he's transferred from the regular prison, okay? Like I said, he was serving a life prison, okay? And he's moved over to the equivalent of a jail that treats inmates that have psychiatric and psychological problems, all right? Now, he was supposedly, according to the laws, he should have, at the very least, even though he was convicted of and sentenced to 15 years, I mean life, he was supposed to at the very least have served 15. Bottom line, make a long story short, 6 years into his stay at that jail / psychiatric psychological unit, the psychiatrist who's treating him thinks that he's okay. Number one, because he shows remorse. Number two, because of his age, blah, 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 blah. So they let him go. He's still up there in Maryland. Okay. He goes around, commits a bunch of more murder. He breaks into places. He gets caught. He doesn't
do anything truly violent once he's released, but within a few months he's already committing all these different crimes up there in that area. And every time they let him go. Now later on, of course, fast forward to when he comes down here to Miami, apparently the prosecutors and all the people involved, especially the judge that decided that he needed to go for life imprisonment, never became aware that he had been released. Because apparently this program worked independently and nobody found out about it until what happened in 1984 here in Miami. So he gets arrested a couple more times for other stuff. And he breaks his parole. First of all, they don't rearrest him for violating his parole up in Maryland. And I guess the last time he just goes ahead and just leaves Maryland altogether. And since nobody's keeping track of him, he comes down here and he starts, from what I understand, before you know it, he hooks up with a girl who is, she's a prostitute. Okay. And it brings him to the point where he goes that night to that area that I was describing across the street from where I was filming at, where it's considered like a lover's lane and a lot of people hang out there. And like I said, as it gets later and later, you know, the traffic dies down, especially if this is back in 1984, a lot less traffic and people just don't hang out. Everybody leaves. So, and I did want to rectify part of what I said, which was it was a guy and two girls. Now the guy, he was 20 years old, his name was George Napoles, and the two girls that were in the car with him, their names were Michelle Ramondi and Jamie Campbell. Both of them were 16-year-old runaway slash prostitutes. Okay, but bottom line, apparently had been drinking, like I said, they all kind of like pass out, and one of the girls, Michelle, actually kind of sees when this car arrives, and like I stated, they all believe that, you know, with the exception of Jamie Campbell, who believe it or not slept through this whole thing, at the very beginning they believe that this guy is a cop until he starts to frisk Michelle Ramondi down and they realize there's something terribly wrong. Okay, and like as I was saying, and I also wanted to correct, what he does is when it becomes apparent to both George Napoles and Michelle Ramondi that he might not be a cop or something's going on, he asks George to come with him a minute to his car. When he gets there, that's when he takes the bat and he basically bashes this guy over the head a few times. And you know, he takes Michelle. Now, contrary to what I had said, apparently he realized that he had lost his wallet right as he leaves, because basically what they said is that he's approaching this toll booth on the causeway, which is right there, right outside the area where that occurred at. He realizes, yeah, that he had dropped his wallet on the beach, so he drives back to where he had already raped her, okay, and he had left George Napoles, you know, and Jamie, she's sleeping through all of this, looking for his wallet. Now, when he finds his wallet, he goes over to where George Napoles is at, turns him over, checks his throat for a pulse. And when he gets back, Michelle asks him, is he still alive? And he tells her, yes, he's still breathing. All right. Now, like I stated, he leaves the beach with Michelle Ramondi for the second time. They continue to drive. You know, one of the times they say they're stopped at a red light, you know, he sees her looking at two police officers on the sidewalk, and he kind of tells her, look, if she tries to alert the officers, he's going to shoot her. All right. And he also threatened to cut her tongue out with a knife that he kept on the dashboard. Then he finally takes her to a spot at a dead end, orders her to take off her clothes, rapes her again. And then he drives her to the address where she was staying at with her sister and her sister's boyfriend. And he tells her that if she calls the police, he's going to kill her and her entire family. And of course, thankfully, she tells her, she wakes everybody up at her house, will call the police, etc. Now, believe it or not, the next morning, you know, the police, you know, they're talking to Michelle. Jamie Campbell wakes up, sees everybody's gone, fails to see George Napoli's body. I'm thinking he's dead by this now, and drives off. I have no idea how she missed that. She just kind of finds out everything after the fact when somebody else that comes to the beach finds George's body there, and then they alert the police, and then of course it all comes together. All right. And it's almost like back in, you know, as I was doing the research on it, it became really apparent, you know, that there was a lot of finger pointing at the authorities in Maryland because they had let this guy out. Not only did he not serve the life sentence he was supposed to, he didn't even serve the minimum, which I believe was a 15 years. They set him free after 6 years after a very horrific, horrific crime. And Michelle Raimondi very luckily escaped being killed because he was ready to kill again. Well, he did kill again, but I'm sure that when he was accusing her of, you know, like, if you go ahead and you go ahead and alert the police, I'm going to cut your tongue out or I'm going to shoot you. He wasn't bluffing. I guess, you know, somewhere along the line, she realized that this guy was going to carry out that threat. All right. And of course, subsequently, he was caught and he was tried. And originally, he did get convicted to serve to the death penalty here in Florida. But there was a lot of legal wrangling. And believe it or not, where because of different things going on with the trial, it wasn't, believe it or not, till last year, 2016, that he finally absolutely got out from under the threat of being executed here in the state of Florida. But he's still in jail. He's still in jail. And it's surprising to think, because even when the police caught up to him, he was giving a false name. Of course, he probably understood that they were looking for him, you know, as far as having an outstanding warrant out of Maryland, because he had gone ahead and he had skipped out on his parole. Well, as unfortunate as that entire situation was, where a young man lost his life and, you know, another girl, even though supposedly, allegedly, she was doing prostitution, was raped and probably thought she was going to lose her life, you know, it appears that there was more heartbreak tied into this whole scenario. Because sometimes this is what I call 6 degrees of separation from mayhem. And sometimes it's a lot less than 6 degrees, because you can tell this started basically going in that direction since 1975, when Ricky Roberts raped and tried to kill a 17-year-old back in Maryland. Then he comes here, does this in 1984. Now, almost 12 years to the day later, Michelle Raimondi has a sister named Catherine, okay? And back in June of 1996, she's living up in Hollywood, Florida, right? She is living with a guy by the name of Randy DeWayne Finney, and she has a child with him named Cody. Now, I'm going to read you a little excerpt from the local newspaper as to what happened. Consumed by a crack cocaine habit and relationship problems with his live-in girlfriend, Randy DeWayne Finney killed the woman and their 3-year-old son before hanging himself in their East Hollywood apartment, police said. The bodies were found at 2 a.m. Thursday after a concerned neighbor who had not seen the family since Saturday broke a back window and found Finney hanging from a ceiling fan. The neighbor, Edwin Evans, ran to a payphone across the street from the Tiffany Garden apartment building at 821 North 20th Avenue and dialed 911. When police arrived, they found Finney, 36, hanging from a sheet and a garbled 5-sentence suicide note outlining his woes. It said he was on drugs and he can't live like this anymore, and he was going to take his family with him. The spokeswoman for the police department told all the reporters. The police found the body of Catherine Raimondi, age 40, stuffed into a water heater closet in the one-bedroom apartment, and Cody Raimondi, age 3, was found dead on the bed under a comforter. Now, it stated in the article that the bodies didn't show any signs of trauma, but were already decomposing because they were discovered about 24 to 48 hours after they were killed. And as far as the guy that killed him, Finney, he was just like a roofer with a minor criminal history. And who knows what else might have been going on besides his addiction. Maybe he did have mental illness as well. Now, one of the neighbors stated that even before that occurred, that she had said that this guy Finney was violent with his girlfriend and didn't even appear to be a really nice guy to the people that lived, I guess, in that little apartment building where they were last at. As you could tell, you know, it's almost like a ripple effect that sometimes happens when one tragedy follows another. Even if it's not the same family, it's almost like it hands off to someone else. And this, as a matter of fact, I wonder if there was any type of supernatural events that have taken place in that apartment where that murder-suicide took place. And I wanted to finish up by also, when I was doing my research, I found that, number one, about 2 years before I was there, right about a few hundred feet from where I was standing at that night, there was a body of a firefighter who committed suicide, who shot himself, was found right there on the incline early that morning. Okay. And then I also did follow up as to at least the two names that came through on the ovulus, one of them being Amber and the other one being Lester. And surprisingly, I did find a connection. Number one, there is such a thing as an Rickenbacker bass amber fire glow, which is, I guess, it's a type of bass guitar. And this Rickenbacker has no connection to the Rickenbacker, Captain Rickenbacker, who this causeway was named for. This is another company out of California who I believe are the first ones that actually produced electric guitars. But again, I want, as I stated before, what things sometimes come through the ovulus, it's really difficult to do a connection, but maybe this is somebody who was into this type of bass guitar, which from what I understand, you know, it's pretty well made and much sought after guitar. And the second thing was singing with Lester. Turns out that Captain Rickenbacker, who was the guy that causeway was built for, he was he had been a race car driver. He had been a flying ace in World War I. It turns out that in 1942, his plane goes down and he spends 3 weeks in a raft. Well, three rafts, actually, with the bunch of guys that were in there. And they were about to die. They were surviving basically on rainwater and fish that they could catch. And one of the guys that rescued him, that found him and the group that he was with, was a guy by the name of Lester Boot or Boutte, okay, who was the radio man on one of the planes that found him and his group, which when I saw that, I was like, wow. So again, sometimes I thought that I was going to find maybe some connection to what had gone on there before, but surprisingly, it's incredible what does come through at the end of everything, you know, as to what the connection actually is. But anyway, guys, as like I said, this turned into such a longer production than I immediately thought of when I first started to do it, that I'm going to do a part two, which is when I go into the cases of the bodies that have been dumped out there, this other 1966 case that we had there in Key Biscayne. So I hope you guys follow up and see part two of this presentation, and subscribe to my channel and hit the like button on this, and I will be seeing you guys then, and thanks for taking a look.